so I let myself have a few minutes to think about what we could have been for each other. If everything had been different somewhere else in our lives. And then? Julia whispered. Estelle smiled, defiantly, happily. Then I went home, but I kept the key to his apartment. I never told Knut. It was my affair. Silence settled in the closet for a while. In the end, Annalena plucked up the courage to say, I've never had an affair. But once I changed hairdressers and I didn't dare walk past the old one for several years. It wasn't the strongest anecdote, but she wanted to feel that she was participating. She had never had time for an affair. How on earth does anyone find the time? All that stress, Annalena thought, and a whole new man to deal with. She had spent her life working and rushing home, working and rushing home, and always felt guilty for not being good enough in either place. In those circumstances, it's easy to feel sympathy for other people who aren't quite good enough. That's probably why, out of all the people in the apartment who had already had the thought, it was Annalena who was the first to say out loud, I think we should try to help the bank robber. Julia looked up, and their eyes met with a whole new sense of respect. Yes, so do I. I was just thinking that. I don't think any of this was the intention, Julia nodded. I just don't know how we could go about helping her, Annalena admitted. No, the police must have the building surrounded, so I don't think there's any way she can escape, sadly, Julia sighed. Estelle drank more wine. She turned the packet of cigarettes over in her hand, because of course you're not allowed to smoke in front of pregnant women. You really aren't, at least not until you're so drunk that you can claim with a clear conscience that you were too drunk to notice that there was one nearby.
Maybe she could just wear a disguise, she suddenly said, with just a hint of a slur on the S in disguise.
Julia shook her head uncomprehendingly.
What? Who could wear a disguise?
The bank robber,
Estelle said, taking another swig.
What sort of disguise?
Estelle shrugged.
The real estate agent.
The real estate agent?
Estelle nodded.
Have you seen any sign of a real estate agent in this apartment since the bank robber arrived?
No, now that you come to mention it.
Estelle drank more wine, then nodded again.
I'm fairly certain that all the police outside will take it for granted that there's a real estate agent present at an apartment viewing. So if...
Julia stared at her, then started to laugh.
So if the bank robber pretends to give herself up and let all the hostages go, she can pretend to be the real estate agent and walk out with the rest of us. Estelle, you're a genius.
Thanks, Estelle said, and peered down into the bottle with one eye closed to see how much was left before she could start smoking. Julia struggled to her feet as quickly as she could and hurried over to the door to call Tarot and explain the new plan, but just as she was about to open the door, there was a knock on it. Not hard, but hard enough to make the three women jump as if a load of puppies and sparklers had been thrown into the closet. Julia opened the door a crack. The rabbit was standing outside looking awkward, insofar as it was possible to tell.
Sorry, I don't want to disturb you, but I've been told to put some pants on.
Your pants are in here? Julia wondered.
The rabbit scratched his neck.
No, I had them in the bathroom before the viewing started, but I washed my hands and managed to splash water on them. Then I saw the scented candles on the wash basin and thought I might be able to dry my pants by warming them up. And then, well, I managed to set my pants on fire. So then I had to pour even more water over them to put the flames out. So my pants ended up soaking wet. And then the viewing started, and I heard you all out in the apartment, and then the bank robber started shouting, and there wasn't really time. Well, to cut a long story short, my pants are still wet. So I was thinking...
The rabbit's head swayed in the direction of the suits hanging in the closet, which he was hoping he might be able to borrow instead. His ears accidentally hit Julia's forehead and she backed away, but the rabbit evidently interpreted this as an invitation to step inside.
Yes, well, come in, why don't you? Julia grunted. The rabbit looked around with interest. "Isn't this lovely?" he said. Annalena disappeared beneath the suits and wiped her eyes. Estelle lit a cigarette, because she didn't think it mattered anymore. And when Annalena aimed a disapproving glance in her direction, Estelle said defensively, "Oh, it'll blow out through the air vent." The rabbit tilted his head slightly. Then he asked, "What air vent?" Estelle coughed. It was unclear if that was because of the cigarette or the question.
"I mean, there seems to be some sort of ventilation in here, but it was only a guess. There's a breeze from up in the ceiling, though."
"What are you talking about?" Julia asked.
Estelle coughed again. Then she stopped coughing. But there was still someone coughing up in the ceiling. They stared at each other, the rabbit and the three women, a diverse group of individuals, to put it mildly, huddled inside a closet at an apartment viewing that had been disrupted by the arrival of a bank robber. Stranger things had probably happened to people in the town, but not much stranger. Estelle had time to think that if Canute had opened the closet door just then, he would have laughed out loud. There would have been breakfast everywhere. And she would have loved that. The coughing up in the ceiling continued, like when you try to stifle it and it just gets worse. A cinema cough. Julia dragged the stepladder to the back of the closet. Estelle got off the chest. Annalena helped the rabbit up. He pressed his hands against the ceiling until it gave way. There was a hatch, and above it a very cramped little space. And there sat the real estate agent.
Chapter 59. In the police station, Jack has nearly lost his voice with rage by this point.
"Tell the truth! Why did you ask for fireworks? Where's the real estate agent? Is there even a real estate agent?"
The real estate agent, whose jacket is still as crumpled as a bulldog's nose after the hours she had spent in the cramped space above the closet, tries and tries to explain everything. But if there's one thing modern life and the internet have taught us, it's that you should never expect to win a discussion simply because you're right. The real estate agent can't prove she isn't the bank robber, because the only way she can do that is to say where the bank robber is right now. And the realtor genuinely has no idea about that. Jack, in turn, refuses to believe that the real estate agent is a real estate agent, because if she was, that would mean he's missed something very obvious, and that in turn would mean that he isn't particularly smart after all. And he simply isn't ready for that. Jim, who has been sitting silently throughout most of the interview, if you can actually call it an interview when it's really only consisted of Jack screaming nonstop, puts his hand on his son's shoulder and says,
"Shall we take a break, son?"
Jack fixes his eyes on him.
"You were fooled, Dad, don't you get that? You went up with those pizzas and you let her fool you!"
Hurt by this, Jim's shoulders slump as he finds himself declared an idiot.
"Can't we just take a break? Just a short one? A cup of coffee, a glass of water."
"Not until I've figured out what really happened," Jack snarls.
He won't succeed. Chapter 60. What actually happened was that when Jack ended the call with the negotiator and ran out of the building on the other side of the street, Jim was just emerging from the building where the hostage drama was taking place. Jack, of course, was furious that Jim had gone into the building despite being told to stay outside, but Jim did his best to calm him down.
"Take it easy now, son. Take it easy. That wasn't a bomb in the stairwell, just a box of Christmas lights."
"I know! Why did you go into the building before I came back?"
"Because I knew you'd never let me go if I waited that long. I've spoken to the bank robber."
"Of course I wouldn't have..."
"Hang on, what?"
"I said I've spoken to the bank robber."
Then Jim told him exactly what had happened. Or rather, as exactly as he could. Because it has to be said that telling stories wasn't one of Jim's greatest talents in life. His wife always said he was the sort of person who tells a joke by starting with the punchline
and then stopping, yelping, "No, hang on, something happened before that, darling. What was it that happened before the funny bit?" Then trying to start from the beginning again, only to get it wrong again. He never remembers the end of films, so he can watch them any number of times and still be surprised when he finds out who the murderer is. He's not much good at party games or television quiz shows either. There's one his son and wife both liked, with celebrities in trains who had to guess where they were going by solving various clues, and Jim's wife used to mimic him as he sat there on the sofa, frantically suggesting everything from Spanish capitals to African republics to tiny Norwegian fishing villages all in the same round. "See, I was right," he always declared at the end, and Jack always snapped, "You're not right if you guess everything." And his wife? She just laughed. Jim missed that so much. With him or at him, he didn't care, as long as she laughed. So Jim took the opportunity to go into the building when Jack wasn't looking, because Jim knew that's what she would have done. He felt very, very foolish when he reached the landing with the box and realized that sometimes Christmas lights were just Christmas lights. But she would have laughed at that, so he kept going. There were two apartments on the top floor. The hostage drama was taking place in the one on the right, and the one on the left was owned by the young couple who couldn't agree about coriander or juicers, and who Jim had had to phone not long before, and the details of whose separation he now knew more about than any normal person ought to know. Just to be on the safe side, he peered through the mail slot, but there were no lights on, and the mail on the mat suggested that no one had been there for a while. Only then did Jim ring the doorbell of the apartment containing the bank robber and hostages. There was no answer for a long time, even though he kept ringing the bell. Eventually, he realized that the bell wasn't working and knocked instead. He had to do that several times as well, but eventually the door opened a crack, and a man dressed in a suit and ski mask looked out, first at the pizzas, then at Jim.
"I haven't got any cash,"
the man in the mask said.
"Don't worry,"
Jim said, holding the pizzas out. The man in the mask squinted suspiciously.
"Are you a cop?"
"No."
"Yes, you are."
Jim noted that the man's accent changed several times as if he couldn't quite make his mind up. And it wasn't possible to determine much about his appearance, not even if he was tall or short, because he never opened the door properly.
"What makes you think I'm a police officer?" Jim asked innocently. "Because pizza delivery guys don't give away pizzas for free."
Jim couldn't really see much point in trying to deny it, so he said,
"You're right, I'm a cop. But I'm on my own and I'm unarmed. Is anyone in there hurt?"
"No, at least no more than they were when they arrived," the bank robber said.
Jim nodded amiably.
"My colleagues out in the street are starting to get nervous, you see, because you haven't made any demands."
Taken aback, the man in the ski mask blinked.
"I asked for pizza."
"I mean, demands in order to release the hostages. We just don't want anyone to get hurt."
The man in the ski mask took the pizza boxes, held up a finger, and said,
"Give me a moment."
He closed the door and disappeared into the apartment. 1 minute passed, then another, and just when Jim was thinking about knocking on the door again, it opened a couple of inches. The man looked out and said,
"Fireworks."
"I don't follow," Jim said.
"I want fireworks, the sort I can see from the balcony. Then I'll let the hostages go."
"Seriously?"
"And no cheap rubbish either. Don't try to trick me. Proper fireworks, all different colors, the sort that look like rain, the whole lot."
"And then you'll release the hostages?"
"Then I'll release the hostages."
"That's your only demand?"
"Yep."
So Jim went back down the stairs, out to Jack in the street, and told him all this. But it's worth pointing out again that Jim really isn't good at telling stories. He's completely hopeless, in fact. So he may not have remembered everything entirely accurately. Chapter 61.
Roger was right that time when he looked at the plans and said that the top floor of the building had probably once been one single large apartment. Then, when the elevator was installed, the apartment was split in two and sold as two separate apartments, which led to a number of creative solutions, among them the double wall in the living room and the abandoned ventilation duct above the closet. That was left intact, ignored for years, until, like people you think have become superfluous with age, it suddenly made itself known again. Because in winter, cold air would blow in from the attic of the old building. The insulation up there is poor, and the air finds its way down in the form of a draft in the closet. You have to sit right at the back, on a chest full of wine, to notice it. Not a bad place to smoke, of course, if you're that way inclined, but apart from that, the vent hasn't served any purpose at all for many years. Not until a real estate agent realized that the space was just large enough for a fairly small real estate agent to climb up and hide so she didn't get shot by an armed bank robber. The opening in the ceiling was so tight that she had only just managed to squeeze through, which of course meant it was far too tight for Leonard not to get stuck. So much so that when he tried to pull himself free, the rabbit's head finally came loose. He fell backward from the hatch, off the stepladder, and landed heavily on the floor. Horrified, the real estate agent leaned past the rabbit's head and out of the hatch to see if he'd killed himself, whereupon she, too, promptly lost her balance and tumbled through the hole, landing on top of him. Annalena's foot was trapped beneath them, and she fell over, too. The stepladder wobbled and, in turn, fell over, hitting the hatch on the way and swinging it shut with a bang. The rabbit's head remained up there. Roger, Roe, and the bank robber heard the commotion from out in the apartment and came rushing over to see what was going on. Everyone inside the closet tried to crawl out, and everyone outside tried to figure out which limbs to pull on, not altogether unlike trying to untangle the wiring of the Christmas lights the Christmas after the Christmas when you had a row with your wife about brothels and ended up stuffing the whole lot into the box, thinking, "I'll sort the whole darn mess out next Christmas." When they were all finally back on their feet, they stared in unison at Leonard's underpants, because it had become difficult not to, even if Leonard himself had no idea what was going on until Annalena howled, "You're bleeding!" Leonard, now free of the rabbit's head, leaned over quite a way to see past his stomach, and sure enough, blood was dripping from his underpants. "Oh, no," he groaned, then stuck his hand inside his underwear and pulled out a small, leaking bag that looked like the sort of thing you hope your child won't notice when you pass it on the motorway. He ran toward the bathroom, but tripped over the edge of the carpet in the living room and fell head first, and the bag of blood flew out of his hands and the contents exploded across the floor. "What the?" Roger exclaimed. Leonard gasped breathlessly. "Don't worry, it's stage blood. I had a bag of it in my underpants because sometimes you need that little bit extra in the whole rabbit out of the toilet routine to really frighten people away." "I didn't order this," Annalena was quick to point out.
"No, it's an optional extra," Leonard confirmed, getting clumsily to his feet.
"Go and put some pants on," Julia said sharply. "Yes, please do," Annalena pleaded.
Leonard obeyed them and set off toward the closet. When he came back out, Zara had just come in from the balcony. It was the first time she'd seen him with clothes on, without the rabbit's head. It was an improvement, she had to admit to herself. She didn't hate him. The rest of them were staring at the blood on the carpet and floor, uncertain about what they ought to do now.
"Nice color, anyway," Roe said.
"Very modern," Estelle nodded, because she'd heard on the radio recently that murder was fashionable in popular culture at the moment.
Roger, in the meantime, was naturally feeling an increasing need for information, so he turned to the real estate agent and interrogated her.
"Where the hell have you been?"
Embarrassed, the realtor adjusted her rather too large and very crumpled jacket.
"Well, you see, when the viewing started, I was in the closet."
"What for?" Roger demanded.
I was nervous. I always am before any big viewing, so I usually shut myself in the bathroom for a couple of minutes to give myself a pep talk. You know, you can do this. You're a strong, independent real estate agent, and this apartment will be sold by you. But the bathroom was occupied, so I went into the closet. And then I heard... She gestured politely but nervously toward the woman standing in the middle of the room with her mask in one hand and the pistol in the other. Estelle intervened helpfully and said, "Yes, this is the bank robber, but she isn't dangerous. She's just been holding us hostage. But we've been very well looked after. We're going to get pizza." The bank robber nodded apologetically to the real estate agent and said, "Sorry, don't worry, this isn't a real pistol." The real estate agent smiled in relief and went on, "Well, I was in the closet, and then I heard someone scream, 'We're being robbed!' And then I suppose I acted on instinct."
"What do you mean by on instinct?" Roger wanted to know.
The real estate agent started to brush off her jacket. "I've actually got several viewings over the next few weeks. The House Tricks Real Estate Agency has a duty to its clients. So I thought, I can't die. That would have been irresponsible of me. And then I discovered the hatch in the ceiling, so I climbed up there and hid."
"All this time?" Roger wondered.
The real estate agent nodded so hard that her back creaked. "I hoped I might be able to crawl out of the other end somehow, but I couldn't." Then she seemed to think of something important and clapped her hands together and exclaimed, "Well, goodness, look at me standing here chattering away. First and foremost, How's Tricks? How lovely that so many of you were able to come to this viewing. Is there anyone who'd like to make an offer on the apartment straight away?" The assembled gathering didn't look particularly impressed by the question, so the agent threw her arms out happily. "Would you like to look around a bit more?" "No problem. I haven't got any other viewings today." Roger's eyebrows sank.
"Why are you even holding a viewing the day before New Year's Eve? I've never experienced that before, and I've attended quite a few viewings, I can tell you."
The real estate agent looked as cheerful as only a real estate agent who's recently been released from a confined space can look. "It was one of the seller's requests, and I don't mind, because at the House Tricks Real Estate Agency, every day is a working day." The others collectively rolled their eyes at this. All except Estelle, who shivered and asked,
"It's cold in here, isn't it?"
"Yes, it is, isn't it? Cooler than Roger had budgeted for," Ro exclaimed to lighten the mood, then regretted it at once because Roger's mood didn't seem to have been lightened at all. Julia, who by now was aching in most parts of her body and who had run out of patience altogether, elbowed her way past them all and went and closed the balcony door. Then she went over to the open fireplace and started to sort out the wood.
"We might as well light a fire while we wait for the pizzas."
The bank robber stood in the middle of the room with the pistol in her hand, for all the good that was doing. She looked at the group of hostages, which had now grown by one more person, which the bank robber could only assume would increase the length of her prison sentence proportionately. So she sighed.
"You don't have to wait for the pizzas. You can all go now. I'll give up and let the police do, well, whatever they're thinking of doing. You can all go first. I'll wait here so that no one else gets hurt. I never meant to take anyone hostage. I just needed money for the rent so my ex-husband's lawyer wouldn't take my daughters away from me. It was, sorry, I'm an idiot. You didn't deserve any of this. Sorry."
Tears were streaming down her cheeks, and she was no longer making any attempt to stop them. Maybe it was the fact that she looked so small that got to the others. Or maybe they each in turn found themselves thinking about what they'd actually experienced that day and what it had meant for them. Suddenly, they all started to protest at the same time, talking over each other.
"But you can't just," Estelle began.
"You haven't hurt anyone," Annalena went on.
"There must be some way of solving this," Julia nodded.
"Perhaps we could find a way out," Leonard suggested.
"We certainly need a bit of time to gather all the information before you let us go," Roger declared.
"And the bidding hasn't even started yet," the real estate agent piped up. "We could just wait for the pizzas, couldn't we?" Rose suggested.
"Yes, let's have something to eat. This has all turned out to be rather pleasant, hasn't it? Getting to know each other like this. And that's all thanks to you,"
Estelle beamed.
"I'm sure the police won't shoot you,"
Not much, anyway, Annalena said comfortingly. Why don't we all go outside with you? They won't fire if we all leave at the same time, Julia insisted.
There must be a way out. If it's possible to sneak into a viewing, then it must be possible to sneak out, Leonard pointed out.
Let's all sit down and make a plan, Roger demanded.
And make bids on the apartment, the real estate agent added hopefully.
Any pizza, Roe said.
The bank robber looked at each of them in turn for a long time. Then she whispered gratefully,
Worst hostages ever.
Help me lay the table, Estelle said, taking her by the arm. The bank robber didn't resist and went with Estelle into the kitchen. She returned with glasses and plates. Julia carried on sorting out the fire. Zara wrestled with her personality for a while, then handed Julia her lighter without her having asked for it. Roger was standing beside the fireplace, unsure of how to make himself useful, and said to Julia,
Do you know how to do that?
Julia glared at him and was about to tell him that her mom had taught her how to make a fire, in such a way that Roger couldn't be sure that didn't mean Julia and her mother had set fire to her father. But it had been a long day. They had all heard one another's stories, and that made it harder to dislike one another. So Julia said something incredibly generous instead. No. Can you show me how to do it? Roger nodded slowly, crouched down, and started to talk to the wood.
We can. I'm assuming we can, unless you... We can do it together, he mumbled.
She swallowed and nodded. I'd like that.
Thanks, he said quietly.
Then he showed her how he usually started fires. Is it supposed to smoke that much? Julia wondered.
There's something wrong with the wood, Roger grunted.
Really?
There's something wrong with the damn wood, I tell you.
Have you opened the damper?
Of course I've opened the damn damper.
Julia opened the damper. Roger muttered under his breath, and she started to laugh. He joined in. They weren't looking at each other, but the smoke was stinging their eyes, and tears were streaming down their cheeks. Julia glanced at him. Your wife's nice, she said.
So's yours, he replied.
They each poked at separate pieces of wood in the fireplace. If you and Aunt Elena would really like the apartment, then... Julia began, but he interrupted her.
No, no. This is a good apartment for children. You and Ro should buy it.
I don't think Ro wants it. She finds fault with everything, Julia sighed. Roger poked harder at the fire.
She's just scared she isn't good enough for you and the baby. You need to tell her that's nonsense. She's worried she won't be able to mend the baseboards herself, so you'll just have to tell her that no one can fix the damn baseboards until they've done it once. Everybody has to start somewhere.
Julia let that sink in. She stared into the fire. Roger did the same. Each of them staring at a different piece of wood, a bit of flame, a lot of smoke. Can I say something personal, Roger? She whispered after a while. You don't have to prove anything to Aunt Elena. You don't have to prove anything to anyone anymore. You're good enough. They each poked at the fire, and they both got a hell of a lot of smoke in their eyes. They said nothing more. There was a knock at the door, because the policeman outside had finally figured out that the doorbell didn't work. Chapter 62.
I'll get it, the bank robber said.
No, what if it's the police? Ro exclaimed.
It's probably just the pizzas, the bank robber guessed.
Are you mad? The police would never send a pizza delivery guy into a hostage situation. I mean, you're armed and dangerous, Ro said.
I'm not dangerous, the bank robber said, hurt.
I didn't mean it like that, Ro said apologetically.
Roger got to his feet over by the fireplace, which was smoking considerably less now, and pointed at the bank robber with a lump of wood as if it were his hand.
Rose, right. If you open the door, the police might shoot you. It would be better if I went.
Julia agreed, albeit a little too readily for Roger's liking.
Yes, let Roger go.
Who knows? We might manage to come up with a way to help you escape, and then the police will never know that you are a woman. Everyone will just assume that the bank robber's a man.
Why? Roger wondered. Because women aren't usually that stupid, Zara interjected, ever helpful.
The bank robber sighed hesitantly, but Anna Lena took a tiny, tiny step toward the middle of the room and whispered,
Please, don't open the door, Roger. What if they shoot?
Roger got some smoke in his eyes, even though there wasn't any now. He didn't say anything. So Leonard stepped forward and said,
Oh, let me do it. Give me the mask and I'll pretend to be the hostage taker. I'm an actor, after all. I was in The Merchant of Venice at the local theater.
Isn't it The Merchant from Venice?
Anna Lena wondered.
Is it? Leonard asked.
Oh, I like that play. There's a lovely line in it. Something about a light,
Estelle declared happily, but she couldn't for the life of her remember what it was.
God, just stop babbling and concentrate for a minute, Julia snapped,
because there had just been another knock on the door. Leonard nodded and held his hand out to the bank robber.
Give me the mask and pistol.
No, give them here. I'll go,
Roger snapped, with a renewed need for validation. The two men squared up against each other as well as they could. Roger would probably have liked to hit Leonard again, all the more so now that the rabbit's head was gone. But perhaps Leonard could see how much Roger was hurting. So before Roger had time to clench his fists, he said,
Don't be angry with your wife, Roger. Be angry with me.
Roger still looked angry, but that must have struck home somewhere, making a tiny crack in his anger where the air slowly seeped out of it.
Aye,
he grunted, not looking at Anna Lena.
Let me do this, Leonard asked.
Please, darling,
Anna Lena whispered. Roger looked up only as far as her chin and saw it was quivering. And he backed down. It could have been a touching moment, actually, if only he could have stopped himself muttering,
For what it's worth, I hope they shoot you in the leg, Leonard.
It was nicer than it sounded.
At that moment, Estelle managed to remember the line from the play, so she declared, That light we see is burning in my hall. How far that little candle throws his beams. So shines a good deed in a naughty world.
There was another she remembered now. Such a want wit sadness makes of me. But she didn't say that one out loud because she didn't want to spoil the mood. The bank robber looked at the little old lady.
I'm so sorry, I've only just remembered that you were waiting for your husband. Knut, wasn't it? He was parking the car when I... He must be so worried, she said, distraught with guilt.
Estelle patted the bank robber's arm.
No, don't worry about that. Knut's already dead.
The bank robber's face turned white.
While you've been in here? He died while you were here? Oh, dear Lord.
Estelle shook her head.
No. He's been dead a while. The whole world doesn't revolve around you, dear.
The bank robber managed to say.
Estelle patted her arm.
I just said Canoe was parking the car because I get lonely sometimes, and it feels better to pretend that he's on his way. Especially at this time of year, he always used to like New Year. We used to stand at the kitchen window watching the fireworks. Well... We used to stand on the balcony for years, but I couldn't bring myself to go out there after something that happened down on the bridge 10 years ago. It's a long story. Anyway, Knut and I used to stand in the kitchen watching the fireworks through the window, and... Oh, you miss such peculiar things. I almost miss that more than anything. Knut loved fireworks, so I suppose I always feel extra lonely at New Year. I'm such a silly old woman.
Everyone else had fallen silent, listening as she related this. It could have been a touching moment, actually, if Zara hadn't cleared her throat at the other end of the room.
Everyone thinks Christmas is when most people kill themselves. That's a myth. Far more people commit suicide at New Year.
That spoiled the mood. It's hard to deny that it did. Leonard looked at Roger. Roger looked at the bank robber. The bank robber looked at them all, Then she nodded decisively. When the apartment door was finally opened, Jim, the police officer, was standing outside. A short while later, he went back down to the street and told his son he'd spoken to the bank robber. Chapter 63. Jack stomps out of the interview room, exhausted with anger. The real estate agent is still sitting in there, terrified, looking on as the younger of the two police officers starts to march up and down the corridor. Then she turns hopefully to the older officer, who is still seated in the room, looking sad. Jim doesn't seem to know what to do with his hands, or any other part of his body for that matter, so he just passes the glass of water to her. It shakes, even though she's holding it with all 10 digits.
"You have to believe me. I swear I'm not the bank robber," she pleads.
Jim glances out at the corridor, where his son is walking around hitting the walls with his fists. Then Jim nods to the realtor, hesitates, nods again, stops himself, then finally puts his hand very briefly on her shoulder and admits,
"I know."
She looks surprised. He looks ashamed. When the old policeman, and he's never felt older than he does right now, lifts his hand, he toys with his wedding ring. An old habit, but scant comfort. He's always felt that the hardest thing about death is the grammar. Often he still says the wrong thing, and Jack hardly ever corrects him. Sons probably don't have the heart to do that. Jack mentions the ring once every 6 months or so, saying, "Dad, isn't it time you took that off?" His dad nods as if he'd just forgotten about it, tugs it a little as if it fits more tightly than it actually does, and mumbles,
"I will, I will."
He never does. The hardest thing about death is the grammar, the tense, the fact that she won't be angry when she sees that he's bought a new sofa without consulting her first. She won't be anything. She isn't on her way home. She was. And she really did get angry that time Jim bought a new sofa without consulting her first. Goodness, how angry she was. She could travel halfway around the world to the worst chaos on the planet, but when she came home, everything had to be exactly the way it always was, or she got upset. Of course, that was just one of her many strange little habits and quirks. She put onion flakes on breakfast cereal and poured béarnaise sauce on popcorn. And if you yawned when she was next to you, she would lean forward and stick a finger in your mouth just to see if she could pull it out again before you closed your mouth. Sometimes she put cornflakes in Jim's shoes, sometimes little bits of boiled egg and anchovies in Jack's pockets. And the looks on their faces when they realized seemed to amuse her more and more each time she did it. That's the kind of thing you miss. That she used to do this. That she used to do that. She was. She is. She was Jim's wife. Jack's mom is dead. The grammar, that's the worst thing of all, Jim thinks. So he really wants his son to be able to pull this off, solve the whole thing, save everyone. It just doesn't seem to be working. He goes out into the corridor, looks at Jack. They're alone out there. No one can overhear their conversation. The son turns around, despairing.
"It must be the real estate agent who did it, Dad. It must be,"
he manages to say, but the words get weaker and weaker the further into the sentence he gets. Jim shakes his head, painfully slowly.
"No, it isn't her. The bank robber wasn't in the apartment when you stormed in, son. You're right about that. But she didn't leave with the hostages, either."
Jack's eyes dart wildly around the corridor. He clenches his fists, looking for something else to hit.
"How do you know that, Dad? How the hell do you know that?"
he yells as if he were yelling at the sea. Jim blinks as if he were trying to hold back the tide.
"Because I didn't tell you the truth, son."
And then he does. Chapter 64.
All the witnesses from the hostage drama were released at the same time. In a way, this story stops as suddenly for them as it began. They gather their things and are shepherded gently out onto the little flight of steps at the back of the police station. When the door closes behind them, they look at each other in surprise. The real estate agent, Zara, Leonard, Annalena, Roger, Ro, Julia, and Estelle.
"What did the police say to you?" Roger immediately asks the others.
"They asked loads of questions, but Jules and I just played dumb," Ro declared happily.
"How clever of you," Zara says.
"So none of the police said anything particular to any of you at all when they let you go?"
Roger demands to know. They all shake their heads. The young police officer, Jack, had just gone from room to room, saying no more except that they were free to go and that he was sorry it had taken such a long time. The only thing he was careful to say was that they wouldn't be leaving via the front entrance of the police station, because there were reporters waiting out there. So now the little group is gathered at the back of the station, glancing nervously at each other. In the end, Annalena asks the question they're all thinking.
"Is she okay? When we left the apartment, I saw a police officer standing in the stairwell, that older one, and I thought, how on earth is she going to get into the other apartment now?"
"Exactly. When the police told me the pistol was real and that they'd heard a shot from inside the apartment, I thought, ugh."
The real estate agent nods without wanting to finish the thought.
"Who helped her get out if it wasn't us?"
Roger wants to know, eager for correct information. No one has an answer to that. But Estelle looks down at her phone, reads a text message, and nods slowly. Then she smiles, relieved.
"She says she's okay."
Annalena smiles at that.
"Say hi from us."
Estelle says she will. Behind them, a woman in her 20s emerges from the police station on her own. She's trying to look confident, but her eyes are darting about wildly in search of somewhere to go and someone to go there with.
"Are you okay, dear?" Estelle wonders.
"What? Why are you asking?"
London snaps. Julia looks at the name badge on London's blouse. She never took it off after she left work for the interview.
"Were you the person working at the counter in the bank that got robbed?"
London nods hesitantly.
"Oh my, were you very frightened?"
Estelle wonders. London nods, not as if she means to, but as if her body is answering for her when her brain doesn't dare.
"Not at the time, not when it happened, but afterward. When I found out that it might have been a real pistol after all."
The others on the steps nod understandingly. Ro puts her hands in the dress pockets beneath her coat, inclines her head toward a small cafe on the other side of the street, and says, "Do you fancy a coffee?" London feels like lying and saying that she has places to be, people to see, because it's like New Year's Eve tomorrow. But instead, she says,
"I don't like coffee."
"We'll find something else for you," Ro promises. That's a nice thing to promise someone, so London nods slowly. Ro becomes the first friend she's had in a long time. Ever, perhaps.
"Wait for me," Julia says.
"What, worried I'm going to get robbed if I go on my own or something?"
Ro grins. Julia doesn't grin. Ro clears her throat and mumbles,
Okay, too soon to make jokes about it. I get it.
As they cross the street, London whispers to her,
"That wasn't a very good joke."
"Who are you, the joke police or what?"
Ro grunts.
"Darling, if you get shot, I'm going to give your birds away,"
Julia calls behind them.
"Now that was funny,"
London chuckles. She hasn't had anything to laugh at for a long time. Ever, perhaps. She receives a letter a few days later, written by a bank robber who wants to apologize, which means more to the 20-year-old than she can admit to anyone for many years. Not until she falls in love, in fact. But that's an entirely different story. Julia hugs everyone on the steps and is hugged back in turn. When she gets to Estelle, the young woman and the much older one look into each other's eyes for a long time. Estelle says,
"There's a book I'd like to give you by my favorite poet."
Julia smiles.
I was thinking that maybe we could meet up, you and me, now and then. Maybe we can exchange books in the elevator.
How do you mean? Estelle wonders.
Julia turns to the real estate agent.
Will you sort out the paperwork?
The real estate agent nods so enthusiastically that she actually starts to jump off the ground. Roger finds himself grinning as well, suddenly delighted.
So you and Roe bought the apartment after all? Did you get a good price?
Julia shakes her head.
No, not that apartment. We bought the other one.
Roger laughs out loud at that. It's been a while since he last did that. That makes Anna Lena so happy that she has to sit down in the middle of the steps, in the middle of winter. Chapter 65.
The truth, the truth, the truth.
So Jim came back down to the street and told Jack what had just happened inside the building after he spoke to the bank robber. But that isn't quite what happened, not really. Not at all, in fact. In part, that was because Jim was bad at telling stories, but it was mostly because he was very good at lying. Because it wasn't Leonard who opened the door when Jim showed up with the pizzas. It was the bank robber, the real bank robber. Both Roger and Leonard had insisted on being allowed to wear the ski mask, but after a long pause, she had said no. She had looked at them, her voice gentle with appreciation, then given them a determined nod.
Obviously, I can't set a good example to my daughters and teach them not to do idiotic things now, but I might at least be able to show them how you take responsibility for your actions.
So when Jim knocked on the door again, she opened it, without the mask. Her hair was draped over her shoulders, the same color as Jim's daughter's hair. Sometimes two strangers only need one thing in common to find each other sympathetic. She saw the wedding ring on his finger, old and dented, tarnished silver. He saw hers, thin and discreet, gold, no gemstones. Neither of them had taken them off yet.
"Are you a police officer?"
she asked so quickly that Jim lost his train of thought.
"How did you?"
"I don't think the police would send a real pizza delivery guy if you thought I was armed and dangerous," she smiled, more like her face actually cracking than cracking into a smile.
"No, no. Well, yes. And yes, I am a police officer."
Jim nodded, holding the pizzas out.
"Thanks,"
she said, taking them with one hand as the pistol dangled in the other. Jim couldn't take his eyes off it.
"How are you doing?"
he asked, which he may not have done if she'd been wearing a mask.
"I'm not having the best day," she confessed. "Is anyone in there hurt?"
She shook her head in horror.
"I'd never."
Jim looked at her, noting her trembling fingers and the bite marks on her lower lip. He couldn't hear anyone crying inside the apartment. There was no one shouting, no one who sounded afraid at all.
"I need you to put the pistol down for a little while," he said.
The bank robber nodded apologetically.
"Can I give them the pizzas first? They're hungry. It's been a long day for them.
Jim nodded. She turned around and disappeared for a while, then came back without the boxes and without the pistol. From behind her, someone exclaimed, "That isn't a Hawaiian!" And someone else laughed,
"You don't know a damn thing about Hawaiians!"
Laughed. Then came the sound of idle chatter between strangers who were no longer quite that. It's probably hard to say precisely what would be normal in a hostage drama, but this certainly wasn't it. Jim looked intently at the bank robber.
"Can I ask, how did you get caught up in all this?"
The bank robber, now unarmed, took such a deep breath that she doubled in size, then she became smaller than ever.
"I don't know where to start."
Then Jim did something deeply unprofessional. He reached out his hand and wiped a tear from the bank robber's cheek.
"My wife had a joke she used to like. How do you eat an elephant?"
"I don't know."
"A bit at a time."
She smiled.
"My kids would have liked that. They have a terrible sense of humor."
Jim put his hands in his pockets and sat down heavily on the landing next to the door. The bank robber hesitated for a moment, then sat down with her legs crossed. Jim smiled.
My wife had a terrible sense of humor as well. She liked laughing and causing trouble. The older she got, the more trouble she was. She always told me I was too nice. That's a terrible thing to be told by a priest, isn't it?
The bank robber laughed quietly, then nodded. Who did she used to cause trouble with?
Everyone. The church, the parish, politicians, people who believed in God, people who didn't believe in God. She made it her job to defend the weakest, the homeless, migrants, even criminals. Because somewhere in the Bible, Jesus says something like, I was hungry and you gave me food. I was homeless and you looked after me. I was sick and you cared for me. I was in prison and you visited me. And then he says something like, what we do for the weakest among us, we also do for him. And she took everything so damn literally, my wife. That's why she kept causing trouble.
Has she passed away?
Yes.
I'm sorry. He nodded gratefully. It's so odd, he thought, that still, after all this time, it feels so incomprehensible that she isn't here. That his heart hasn't gotten used to the fact that no giggling idiot is going to stick her finger in his mouth when he yawns, or pour flour in his pillowcase just as he's about to go to bed. No one to argue with him, love him. There's no getting used to the grammar of it all. He smiled sadly and said,
Now your turn.
At what? The bank robber said.
Telling your story about how you ended up here.
How long a story do you want?
As long as you like. One bit at a time.
Which was a nice thing to say. So the bank robber told him. My husband left me. Well, he kicked me out, actually. He'd been having an affair with my boss. They fell in love. They moved in together in our apartment because it was only in his name. Everything happened so quickly, and I didn't want to make a fuss or cause chaos for the children's sake.
Jim nodded slowly. He looked at her ring and toyed with his own. There's nothing harder to remove.
Girls or boys?
Girls.
I've got one of each.
I don't want them to.
Where are they now?
With their dad. I was supposed to pick them up tonight. We were going to celebrate New Year together. But now I...
She trailed off.
Jim nodded thoughtfully.
What did you need the money from the bank robbery for?
The desperation on her face revealed the chaos in her heart as she said, To pay the rent. I needed $6,500. My husband's lawyer was threatening to take the girls away from me if I didn't have anywhere to live. Jim held on to the handrail to stop himself collapsing as his heart broke. Empathy is like vertigo. $6,500. Because she thought she'd lose her children otherwise. Her children.
There are rules, legislation. No one can just take your children away from you simply because...
He began, then thought better of it and said, But now they can. Now you've held up a bank, and... His voice almost gave out as he whispered,
You poor child, what have you got yourself mixed up in?
The woman had to force her tongue to move, her lips to open, as her smallest muscles seemed to have almost given up.
I'm an idiot. I know. I didn't want to cause any trouble with my husband. I didn't want to expose the girls to that. I thought I might be able to sort it all out for myself. But all I've done is create chaos. It's my fault. It's all my fault. I'm ready to give up now. I'll let all the hostages go. I promise. The pistol's still in there. It isn't even real.
Jim couldn't help thinking that was one hell of a reason to rob a bank. Because you're scared of conflict. He tried to see her as a criminal, tried to look at her without seeing his daughter, and failed at both.
Even if you release the hostages and give up, you'll still end up in prison. Even if the pistol isn't real,
he said mournfully. And of course he'd been a police officer long enough to have seen that it was. He knew she wouldn't stand a chance, no matter how sympathetic any decent person might feel about her situation. You're not allowed to rob banks. You're not allowed to run around with firearms. And we can't let criminals like that go unpunished if we catch them. So Jim concluded there and then that the only way she wouldn't get punished was not to do that. Not to catch her. He looked around in the stairwell. On the door of the apartment behind the bank robber was a real estate agent's sign bearing the text, "For Sale! House Tricks Real Estate Agency. House Tricks." Jim stared at it for a while, ransacking his memory. "That's odd," he finally said. "What is?" the bank robber wondered.
"House Tricks Real Estate Agency. That's a fairly silly name."
"Maybe," the bank robber nodded, not having given it much thought before then. Jim rubbed his nose.
"It might just be a coincidence, but I spoke to the couple who own the neighboring apartment on the phone a little while ago. They're splitting up because one of them likes coriander and the other also likes coriander, but not quite as much, but apparently that's enough of a reason if you're young and are on the internet."
The corners of the bank robber's mouth tried to form a smile. "No one wants to be bored anymore." She was thinking that the worst thing of all, the most impossible thing to reconcile herself to emotionally, was the fact that she still loved her husband. Every blood vessel felt like it was exploding every time that realization struck her, that she couldn't stop loving him, not even after everything he'd done. Not even then could she stop herself wondering if it had all been her fault. Maybe she wasn't enough fun. Maybe it's unreasonable to expect someone to stay with you if you're not fun.
"No, that's just it. Everything has to be like the first flush of infatuation for youngsters. Nothing can be mundane. They've got the attention span of a kitten with a glittery rubber ball," Jim agreed, suddenly excited, and went on. "So they're separating and selling the apartment. One of them couldn't remember what the real estate agent's name was, just that it was a silly name. And you know what? House Tricks Real Estate Agency. That's a really silly name."
He pointed at the sign on the door of the apartment where the real estate agent was, then at the door opposite. It was too small a town to have many estate agencies with silly names. It wasn't even big enough to have more than one hairdressing salon called The Uppercut.
"Sorry, I don't understand the significance," the bank robber said.
Jim scratched his stubble.
"I was just thinking, is the real estate agent in there with you?"
The bank robber nodded.
"Yes, she's driving everyone mad. When I went in with the pizzas just now, she was making Roger stand near the balcony. Then she went and stood at the other end of the apartment. Then she threw her keys to him so he could see how far you could throw something because it's all open plan."
"How did that go?"
"Roger ducked. The window very nearly broke." The bank robber smiled. It was a friendly smile, Jim thought. Not the sort that wants to hurt anyone. He looked at the sign again.
"I don't know. This might be. But if it is the same real estate agent who's going to sell the neighboring apartment, then maybe she's got the keys to that one with her, and then..."
He couldn't quite bring himself to say it.
"What do you mean?" the bank robber said.
Jim pulled himself together, stood up, and cleared his throat.
"What I mean is that if the real estate agent is also selling the next apartment, and if she's got the keys with her, then perhaps you could hide in there. When the other police officers come up here, they won't break open all the doors to the other apartments to look for you. Not right away, at least."
"Why not?"
Jim shrugged. "Because we're not that good. Everyone will be concentrating on getting the hostages out first. And if you tell them to close the door behind them, then everyone will assume that the bank robber, you, are still in the apartment. This apartment. Then, once we've smashed the door in and discovered you're not there, we can't just smash the other doors in willy-nilly. That would cause a huge stink. Bureaucracy, you know. We'll have to take the hostages to the station first and get witness statements from them, and I don't know. You might be able to come up with a way of getting out. And you know what? If anyone were to find you in the other apartment, you can always pretend you live there. We've been assuming that the bank robber is a man right from the start."
The bank robber was still wide-eyed and uncomprehending.
"Why?" she asked again.
Because women don't normally do this sort of thing, Jim said, as diplomatically as he could. She shook her head. No, I mean, why? Why are you doing this for me? You're a police officer. I mean, you're not supposed to do this sort of thing for me.
Jim nodded feebly. He rubbed his hands on his pants, then his wrists across his brow.
My wife used to quote some guy who said, what was it? He said that even if he knew that the world was going to hell tomorrow, he'd plant an apple tree today.
That's lovely, the bank robber whispered. Jim nodded. He wiped the back of his hand over his eyes.
I don't want to catch you. I know you've made a big mistake here, but that sort of thing happens.
Thank you.
You need to go in and ask the real estate agent if she's got the keys to the other apartment, because it won't be long before my son loses patience and comes storming in here, and then...
The bank robber blinked several times.
Sorry? Your son? He's a police officer, too. He'll be the first one through the door.
The bank robber felt her throat tighten and her voice faltered.
He sounds brave.
He had a brave mom. She would have robbed banks for his sake, if she'd had to. I didn't even believe in God when we met. She was beautiful, I wasn't. She could dance, I could barely stay on my feet. Back when we first met, the way we thought about our work was probably all we had in common. The fact that we save those we can.
I don't know if I deserve to be saved, the bank robber whispered. Jim just nodded, looked her in the eye. An honest, decent man about to do something that went against the principles of a profession he's belonged to all his adult life.
Come and find me in 10 years' time and tell me if I was wrong.
He turned to go. She hesitated, swallowed hard, then called, Wait.
Yes?
Can I... Is it too late to make a demand in exchange for releasing the hostages?
What the hell?
He raised his eyebrows, then frowned, at first taken aback, then almost annoyed. The bank robber was trying to make her mind up. Fireworks, she eventually said. There's an old lady in here who always used to watch the fireworks with her husband. He's dead now. I've been holding her hostage all day. I'd like to give her some fireworks. Jim grinned, nodded. Then he went downstairs and lied to his son. Chapter 66. The bank robber went back inside the apartment. There was blood on the floor, but the fire was crackling in the hearth. Ro was sitting on the sofa eating pizza and making Julia laugh. Roger and the real estate agent were arguing about the measurements on the plan, not because Roger was thinking about buying the apartment anymore, but because it's pretty damn important that you're given the correct information. Zara and Leonard were standing by the window. Zara was eating a slice of pizza, and Leonard was having fun watching the expression of disgust on her face. It didn't look as if she liked him, it really didn't, but she didn't seem to hate him either. He, in turn, seemed to think she was wonderful. Anna Lena was standing on her own, holding a plate in one hand, but the pizza on it was untouched and going cold. Naturally, it was Julia who spotted her and got up from the sofa. She went over and asked, Are you okay, Annalena? Annalena looked over at Roger. They still hadn't talked since the rabbit emerged from the bathroom. Yes, she lied. Julia took hold of her arm, encouragingly rather than to comfort her. I don't exactly know what you think you've done wrong, but the fact that you hired Leonard all those times so that Roger would feel like a winner is one of the daftest, weirdest, most romantic things I've ever heard. Annalena prodded the pizza on her plate tentatively. Roger should have had a chance at being promoted. I always thought next year it'll be his turn. But time goes faster than you think, all those years all at once. Sometimes I think that when you live together for a very long time and have children together, life is a bit like climbing trees.
up and down, up and down. You try to cope with everything, be good. You climb and climb and climb, and you hardly ever see each other along the way. You don't notice that when you're young, but everything changes when you have children. And sometimes it feels like you hardly ever see the person you married anymore. Your parents and teammates, first and foremost. And being married slips down the list of priorities. But you, well, you keep climbing trees and see each other along the way. I always thought that was just the way it is, life, the way it has to be. We just had to get through everything, I thought. And I kept telling myself that the important thing was that we kept climbing the same tree. Because then I thought that sooner or later, and this sounds so pretentious, but I thought that sooner or later we'd end up on the same branch. And then we could sit there holding hands and looking at the view. That's what I thought we'd be doing when we got old. But time goes quicker than you think, and it never did get to be Roger's turn.
Julia was still holding her arm, less in encouragement, more to comfort her.
My mom always says I should never apologize for myself. Never say sorry for being good at something.
Anna Elena took a dubious bite of her pizza, then said with her mouth full,
"Why, Mom?"
They stood there in silence. And then there